UK Wine Show, show number 209. Ryan Opaz on social media's technology. Hello, bonjour, and hola. My name's Chris Scott. If you meet socially over the internet and want to share wine tasting notes, but ever wondered how to get the name of the wine correct, well, this is the show for you. Whether you tweet, Facebook, or mash it up, we talk about how to make sure that your wine tasting notes are associated to the right wine. And we look at the technology behind that by talking with Ryan Opaz. We get to grips with QR codes, Elvins, and we ask Ryan whether RFID chips are the solution. As usual, we have a wide-ranging show this week, and news and views. The spotlight's looking at volatile acidity. But let's start off the show with our mystery grape variety. And as usual, I'm going to give you a clue now. I'm going to give you a clue before the interview, and then I'm going to give you the answer at the end of the show. So here's the first clue. Our mystery grape is Spain's most widely planted grape variety, and it's a variety that's planted in such low vine density that its vineyards cover more ground than any other white variety in the world. This thick-skinned grape, whose vines are trained into low bushes, has a great resistance to drought, and hence its popularity in central Spain, where this is a constant problem for growing grapes. It's also found in Madrid and Andalusia. I'll give you the next clue after the news and the spotlight before the interview, but next up we have the news with Jane.
Thanks, Chris. Australian drinks company Foster's has announced it will separate its wine business from its beer business over the next 12 months to give the newly formed businesses the flexibility to develop their own strategies and policies. CEO Ian Johnston said they were increasingly seeing the benefits of operating separately and that the two businesses operated in separate market segments with different strategic and operating characteristics. The timing of the demerger has yet to be decided, but it's unlikely to be completed until the end of the first half of 2011 at the earliest.
It was a poor move by Foster's, as the saying goes, you know, you shouldn't mix grape and grain. But the high-profit beer business that grew out of the Australian old monopolistic state controls thought that combining the low-margin, high-cost wine business was a great idea. Well, hey, good on them. The merger-slash-purchases of the wine business came in the 1990s, where Australia had excess demand over supply, so they were quite short of wine, and as such, prices were good. This short-term effect made the business very expensive to acquire, and, according to the Australian newspaper, of the $8 billion Australian dollars that was invested in their wine arm, $3.4 billion Australian dollars, or £2 billion, was written off. What a waste. What's next, Jane?
Well, research commissioned by the Wine and Spirit Trade Association shows changes in drinking habits over the last 3 years amongst 1,000 regular drinkers that were surveyed. The report showed a big shift in the number of people drinking rosé, rising from 10% to 18%, while preference for white wine fell from 45% to 37%, and red gained 1% up to 45%. The grape variety gaining most ground proved to be Pinot Grigio, with 56% preferring this variety versus 43% 3 years ago. Meanwhile, latest government statistics show a slight decrease in the overall consumption of alcohol in the UK, with binge drinking and underage drinking falling.
Our drinking habits are changing, but not quickly enough for good old English wine. But that's what English Wine Week's all about, changing people's ideas. When is it, Jane?
From Saturday the 29th of May to Sunday the 6th of June, with a countrywide campaign to promote English wines. During the week, vineyards across the country, from the Scilly Isles to Yorkshire, will be opening their doors to welcome visitors with tours, tastings and special events. Highlights include the Mercure Hotel Group, whose key hotels will be offering their dining guests a complimentary glass of wine from a local vineyard, and the Calf's Head in Clitheroe, Lancashire, who will only serve English wine to their guests during the week, and they'll let guests try before they buy. For all events and participating outlets, you can visit English Wine Week website at www.englishwineweek.co.uk. That's it from me, but don't forget to have a look at our website, 3050.co.uk, for these stories.
Cheers, Jane. I tasted loads of English wines at the English Trade Tasting a month or so ago, and the 2009 is a good vintage for English wine. I've even managed to buy my first 5 cases of Chapel Down English Rosé, which is my personal favourite rosé in the world. So looking forward to getting into that this weekend. Something to look forward to though, next week I'm going to be interviewing Mike Roberts from Ridgeview, and he's got a dream about Merit, using Merit as the wine name for quality English sparkling wine. So we talked to him about that. But that's next week. Right now we're going to focus right in on our spotlight, and this week it's all about volatile acidity. Bit of a strange one, and it's one that I've always struggled with, so hence my reason for wanting to cover it in a spotlight. Volatile acidity, or VA, is simply an organic acid that evaporates from wine. There are a number of different acids that this can create, but around 96% of VA is an acid called acetic acid. Too much VA can cause the wine to taste vinegary, but in the right doses, it can often lift the wine, making the aromas feel sharper, fruitier, and cleaner. But also, many Barolos have high VA, and even the renowned 1947 Cheval Blanc is widely recognized to have high levels of volatile acidity. It's often associated with aging these wines for a period of time they seem to develop it. So like many problems, a small amount is good, but a large amount is not. The sensory threshold for acetic acid is greater than 700 milligrams per litre, which is quite a big number, with concentrations greater than 1.2 to 1.5 grams per litre becoming unpleasant. Now, the most common form of VA is acetic acid, which is caused by bacteria known as actobacteria. In the presence of oxygen, actobacteria reacts with alcohol to form acetic acid, and this is the reason why the wines can start to taste a bit like vinegary once they've been opened for a while. VA can also occur during alcoholic fermentation, and all wines have some level of VA, just some have more. You'll find that wines where they've had a bit of a struggle to get the yeast going is normally associated with VA, and the sort of wines that you will see a bit of is sweet wines. Dessert wines with high levels of sugar make it very hard for yeast to do a clean, fast ferment, and as a result, you find that sweet wines often have a VA in them. You may notice it in cheaper dessert wines where they've got sort of a gingery note. It's quite harsh on the back of the throat. That's usually associated with VA from a dessert wine. I see it in a lot of cheapish wines. So that pretty much ends looking at VA. I hope that gives you a starting point. Anyway, I've always struggled with VA. I did a show with Sam Harrop a wee while ago, if you want to go back on that, looking at wine faults. And we spoke about VA at that point. So you might want to go back and have a listen to that show. But next up, we have our mystery wine grape. As I said, it's one of the most planted wines in the world. And it's one that most people don't normally think of. It's not only used to produce varietal wines, but it's also a blending grape for Spain's brandy. Heavily planted in La Mancha, its native region, it's traditionally blended with Tempranillo in Spain to produce lighter red wines. Nowadays, however, it's made under temperature control into inexpensive, dry, crisp, fruity, or rather neutral medium-bodied wines for early consumption. A real glugger's glugger, so to speak. Have we think about that, I'm going to give you the answers to the mystery grape variety after the interview, which is coming up next. We're going to be talking with Ryan Opaz on social media and some of the technologies that are emerging to try and manage everybody's wine tasting notes. Let's have a listen to what Ryan has to say. Hi, I'm here with Ryan Opaz from Catavino. How are you, Ryan?
Good, very good.
Excellent. We're going to be talking about wine technology almost in terms of social media and sharing tasting notes and all sorts of weird things. But do you want to tell us a wee bit about your relationship with Adega?
Adega.com is one of many social tasting note sites out there. I'd say it's one of the top three, being Cellar Tracker, Vinfolio, and Adega. Mm-hmm. My first experience was with Cellar Tracker, a social cellar place where you can place your cellar online, leave tasting notes, see what other people are tasting. And that was, 2004, maybe even earlier. And when I came to Spain, through some quirky social media connections, I ended up meeting Andre Ribeirinho from Adega, which is located in Lisbon. And he was developing a little bit more social of a version of what Cellar Tracker was. And I saw the potential. I didn't necessarily like everything I saw, but I thought, you know, this is a really, I like this a little bit more. It's a lot more social. It doesn't focus so much on the geek factor and more on the wine as a beverage. And so we started working with him on various projects, but now we're helping him to look at his site a little bit more socially, helping him to promote it some, and to promote the core technology at the Roto Bodega, which makes sure that their data is clean. It's called the AVEN. It's a unique code that they apply to every wine, basically in the world, or in their database. Mm-hmm. And the biggest problem with any wine industry list or database is data cleanliness.
Yeah.
Because as we know, German labels, nobody can spell other than, not even the Germans can, I don't believe. and, you know, with weird accents coming out of every country and wines coming out of Hungary with letters I don't even recognize.
Sure.
You can't do anything with that. And there's so often that you see wines being talked about as different when they're the same.
Mm-hmm. And probably very different tasting notes as well.
Exactly.
I think you gave me an example earlier. We were talking and you mentioned the same wine, exactly the same name,
yep.
Slightly different colored label.
Yeah, exactly. No, that happened when I was selling wine 7 years ago or so. There was a Parker Point wine and there was a variation of gray that separated the two labels. Because of that, and because one of them wasn't imported as heavily as the other, everyone assumed they were the same wine.
And they're different blends with different color.
Exactly.
Same name. Crazy.
Same name. So that, what we're doing is we created this number, which is a 13-digit number, preceded by the letters AVIN, through the avin.cc website, allow people to get an AVIN for their wine. It will be human verified to make sure that it actually matches the wine that they say it is. And at that point, when it is verified, that number will be locked down to that wine. And in the future, that means that we won't have these problems. The big step we're doing is convincing people it's a good idea and showing them how easy it is to do and how it can benefit their business. So here we're at Bibendum. Hopefully I can get Bibendum to listen to me and understand that if they add an AVEN to every wine in their portfolio, their retailers know exactly what wine's coming. Their consumers know exactly what wine's coming. Their producers make sure that they get the right wine when there's an order. All this is taken care of by this random number that is applied. It's just like the ISBN for books.
Yeah.
And without that, the book trade couldn't function.
Sure. Exactly.
It's amazing that the wine trade, which is even more complex at times when it comes to labeling, hasn't come up with something. And it's also frustrating that you have people saying, oh, that's a good idea. I think I'm going to create my own. And when this happened, we had some people say, we're going to create our own. And we said, look, we don't want ownership of this. We want it to be an open, free thing that everyone can take. And so we're separating it from the ADEGA code. And we're going to create a clean database on the avin.cc site that allows for everybody to contribute information to it without anybody owning it. And so that we all have the same data. And so that all that data is clean and correct. And we don't need to be partisan here. We don't need to own it. What we need is for people to use it. And we'll also, as a part of this, be giving, for the geeks out there, an open API, a tool for accessing that data and working with it on your own site, e-commerce, whatever. But in this way, we hope that we can convince more people to adopt it. A very simple concept.
Yeah.
A very simple tool. It's a database.
Yeah.
And it can really solve a lot of problems.
Yeah, there's an awful lot of problems with wine descriptions. And what about your QRs? That was that sort of funny square that...
The QR code.
The QR code, yeah. How does that relate to the AVEN code? And is there any more that I've got to worry about?
No. The AVEN existed, it will exist. One application for it, which we've done with a few of our clients, is there's a technology called a QR code, which is a Japanese 2D dimensional code. It's a square with a bunch of square dots on it.
It's a bit like a barcode, isn't it? But with
it's a square barcode, yeah. Yeah, it's a barcode of sorts. And the idea behind it, I've never been to Japan, but I have friends who've been there, and say you go into restaurants and there's QR codes everywhere for menus and things, and you can scan it and get your menu, make your order, whatever. What it is it's something that isn't locked to a database. It's an actual code. So you can encode any text you can imagine. Anything you can type, you can encode. If you were to put a book in, you'd end up with a very large QR code, but it is possible. So when I first saw it, I said, this makes so much sense on a wine label. You put it on the back of a wine label, and now there's free applications. You download to your phone, you scan the wine label, and boom, now you have information about this wine. And that information can be anything you want. what foods go with. It goes to a mobile website where there's interactivity, where there's a video with the winemaker. Whatever you can imagine, you can put in there.
I've seen these things, I've heard about them anyway, and I know about them being quite popular in Japan, but I haven't really seen them take off in Europe at all.
No, I mean, there are a few people playing with it outside of the wine industry. In the U.S. last year, Pepsi Cola did a huge campaign with it where you won a free trip to who knows where. So in that campaign, they got a lot of people to put them on their phones. Now, the technology to scan it. It's not something that's going to happen overnight, and I'm not saying it's ever going to happen, but I'm saying, why not think like that? What else can we do? I think it was Tesco just released a wine app that you take a picture of the wine label, and it tries to recognize it and does its best to tell you what that wine is and whether or not they sell it. That's great, but the level of technology to scan a wine label and read it is so much higher than a 2D code.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's other practical applications. One example that we want to do actually with a wine show we're going to be doing is you could take and print out these codes for every wine at the show and put them next to the bottles, and people could take and you could hand out a scanner. People could scan and take notes about which wines they like.
Yep.
But take it a step further, even. RFID chips are so cheap and expensive and tiny, you could apply neck hangers for every wine at a wine show with an RFID chip in it. And then with a simple USB dongle, you can take and walk by that same table, scan it over the bottle as a wine I want more information on. It automatically does two things. One, it sends information to the person standing there that this person wants more information about this wine, and it also marks it on your USB dongle, which plugs into your computer, so you can get more information at a later date. Technology is going to really change how we do all this stuff really fast. It's a matter of just thinking outside the box a little bit.
Looking forward maybe 2 years in the future, where do you see things being? Because it is in flux at the moment. There's a lot of balls in the air with a lot of different people.
Yeah. With wine and social media and all that, I think we're still in a playground phase where people are throwing stuff against the wall and seeing what sticks. I think in the next 2 years, you're going to see a lot more tightening up of ideas and ways to work with the online communities. I think you're also going to see a reduction in the number of communities. For instead of a lot of individual communities online, you'll find a few communities with interesting groups and activities going on within them. I mean, kind of like any neighborhood. So I think that's going to happen. You're going to see websites that in some places start to function. Hopefully a diminishing of flash in website design and more use of these social tools. My dream is to see more and more producers talking to consumers and not to critics. I always tell producers, critics ask for free samples and consumers pay for them. So
it's good words.
Who are we going to be talking to in the future? Hopefully the consumer. And talking to them honestly, that's where I really hope. I think the wine show is going to diminish too or change. I think we're seeing like London International Wine Fair, VIN, the big shows, Pro Wine, they're going to have to change or adapt. Last year, one of our reporters went to a VIN Expo. He got there and he got code to get into the free Wi-Fi. Took him forever. When he got on, they had blocked Twitter and Facebook, where this guy had gone for the sole purpose of tweeting every wine he tasted at the show. I mean, the amount of harm they did to an impossible beneficial image was incredible. I really hope they begin to see how you can't have a wine show without a good Wi-Fi setup. It's just not, doesn't make sense.
What about 3G?
3G is great, but you still have people traveling around the world. The best thing you could possibly do is if you have a bunch of international buyers or people coming, have at your door a place to rent 3G dongles or borrow phones or buy cards. Come up with a deal with, call Vodafone, say, hi, I'm doing an international conference. I got 5,000 people coming and I need a stack of, you know, 20 euro cards or pound cards.
Okay.
Make it a priority is what I'm saying.
Okay, Ryan. All right, we'll wrap it up there. We'll let you get back to some tasting.
All right, thank
Cheers,
you.
Cheers, mate. Hope you enjoyed that interview. I've been struggling with wine tasting notes for quite a while. I've built an application for it, but it's sadly been parked. I got a bit waylaid with some other bits and pieces, but I'll be cracking on with it, finishing it off very shortly. I did say next week we're going to talk to Mike Roberts from Ridgeview, one of my favorite English wine producers. We're going to talk to him about his Merit concept. I think that's appropriate given it is part of English Wine Week. I was hoping to talk to another guy about Vine's DNA, but we'll just push that out for another a week or so. How did you get on with the mystery grape variety, though? It was, of course, Erin. It's a wine variety most people don't think of. Everybody thinks, oh, Chardonnay or Cabernet Sauvignon must be the most common grape variety. But it is the Spanish grape, Erin. Well, it's certainly the most widely planted. And before we finish up this week, we've got our quote. This week it comes from Baron Philippe, owner of Chateau Mouton Rothschild. And the quote is their mantra before they were upgraded to a first growth in 1973. I think he'd been saying it for quite a while. First, I cannot be. Second, I disdain. I am Mouton. Until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Chris Scott and the news is read by Jane Scott. To listen to other shows, visit ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.